is Spectrum.
Alternative Myths, Homeopathy, Secret Society, Hypnosis, The Paranormal, Alternative Energy, UFO Abduction, The Weird, The Wild, and The Wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Tommy, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We got Stephen Bassett this week, and if you'll just read a quick bio on him, we'll get to chatting.
Yes, Stephen is a leading advocate for ending the 64-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding the extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group and the Political Action Committee, XPAC, and the executive producer of the X Conference. His work has been extensively covered by national and international media, and over the past 3 years, he has spoken to audiences all over the world about the implications of formal disclosure. So let's welcome Stephen to the show. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, guys. Happy to be with you.
Hey, Stephen, how you doing?
Great.
Tom, do you want to start out?
Well, Stephen, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Paradigm Research Group and your involvement and how you got started?
Sure. Paradigm Research Group was set up in 1996 in July, August, to pursue the political resolution of the UFO-ET issue. And that was it. I mean, it was very simple. It's not a research group, oddly enough. It's an advocacy group, but it was the first thing that PRG did was to I registered as a lobbyist with the United States Congress. So I became the first person to ever do that. It got me a lot of attention, which is a good way to get going. Yeah. And I registered on behalf of a number of research organizations, thus the name Paradigm Research Group. Since then, PRG is pursued a resolution of the ET issue and the advocacy for the truth of this by every means possible. You name it, I've done it. And, of course, worked with others. There's a movement, what we call a disclosure movement, underway. It's growing internationally. And the goal of the whole shebang is not complicated. We will have achieved our primary mission when the United States government or another world government goes in front of their people and says, yep, we got ETs. Couldn't tell you before, but we can tell you now. That is called the disclosure event, capital D, and we then enter a whole new era of human history, and of course I'm looking forward to being involved in that. And that's pretty much what PRG is about.
Okay. There seems to be a lot of minor Ds going on in the disclosure movement.
Well, there's small D disclosure going on all the time. I mean, going all the way back to the 40s. There's been something coming out or something happening all along. So we have learned things over the last 64 years, and that's true in other countries. So small D disclosure has been happening, yes. But
okay,
what makes this unusual and why we have to have a political movement is that the United States government, along with its allies, made a decision that gelled between 1947 and 1953 that the actual acknowledgement of this issue as real and the public engagement of it was risky and needed to be suppressed. And so they embarked on what I refer to call the truth embargo, starting in that period. It was a political policy, a national security policy, that we would not acknowledge this. But it was more than that, because this was not an easy matter. It wasn't like they could just make it a secret and classify it and stick it in a warehouse somewhere. The ETs were coming and going and doing whatever they wanted. So they were being seen, they were being videoed, they were being photographed. So this was no secret. And so what they had to do was to embark on a highly sophisticated program of containment, which I call the truth embargo. That meant they had to lie, they had to put out misinformation, publish crazy stories, occasionally intimidate witnesses and researchers, manipulate the press, and do everything that they thought they could do to ensure that the public would not, or that the government would not have to acknowledge this formally to their people. That, of course, made it a much more complicated situation. So a lot of the disclosure, for instance, has taken place, has in fact been bogus. It's been phony.
Okay.
It's making it that much more difficult.
All right. I remember, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, a lot of it was the giggle factor whenever any sort of UFO anything was presented to the public. Yeah, I don't see that quite as much nowadays. Do you think that's tapering off, or it's just the because UFOs has become such a well-known issue that it's not as, you know, sneered at anymore?
Yeah, there's two things going on. One, the public awareness of the issue, a number of things. The public awareness of the issue has grown to the point where it's virtually 100%. It's hard to find anybody in a first world nation that doesn't know what a UFO is, doesn't know what extraterrestrial means.
Right.
That's powerful. You can't say that about most things. Mm. Secondly, the media in the last 10 years has started to become much more appropriate in its coverage, and much more coverage. Not fully appropriate. They're not prepared to break the truth embargo, but they're writing a lot of stuff. Huge number of articles are being written. And that has certainly made it more acceptable. And thirdly, and this may be the most important, is that my sense is that as of about 1999, early 2000, the government realized that the truth embargo would be ending soon, that it could only, its lifespan was about over. And while they probably had they had their own idea of when, how long it should continue, it was no longer advisable or productive for them to invest in maintaining it. And so I believe around the end of 99-2000, they basically took the gloves off. And I mean, you know, what I mean by take the gloves off is they stopped putting up a lot of resistance. And the truth embargo has pretty much moved forward under its own momentum. It is institutionalized. A lot of people don't need to get an email from the government saying, don't talk about this. They just don't talk about it.
Nice.
And that, of course, has made it easier for people to come forward. We have a lot of witnesses coming forward. They're not being harassed. We have people actually coming forward more so talking about being contactees. Mm-hmm. Even the odd celebrity singer, we're getting a little of that. There'll be more of that. So the simple fact is that we're in the last days of the truth embargo, and not surprisingly, things are loosening up, and that's a good thing.
Right.
Now, do you think that with all these individuals that are coming forward, that has, you know, sort of changed the minds of other folks that may have more information on the inside?
Well, here's the way to think about it. Everybody, there's 7 billion people on this planet. And every one of them will arrive at this personal understanding that they're not alone in the universe in their own time by many paths. The job of the disclosure movement is not to convince everybody. It's simply to advance the political process, raise public awareness, and people will, you know, figure it out or not figure it out. So I think it's fair to say that every day more people arrive at the personal conclusion that ETs are here. The polls certainly show that. They don't poll all the time. I mean, if they would poll every year, we might get a better sense of the trend, but I think that each year more people cross over into the ETH camp. I think more people jump on the disclosure train. And a lot more people start leaning this way, even though they may not have made up their mind yet. This is probably an irreversible trend. Unless the government were to dig in and pour huge resources into somehow trying to turn this around, which I think they even know would be hopeless, And that's fine. But it's not necessary that everybody be convinced that ETs are here. That's not necessary, and it's never going to happen. We are well, there's more than a critical mass of public awareness and sentiment to get this thing done. Now, understand that we are in an interesting era of highly dysfunctional government. All great nations that last any length of time go through this, whether you're Rome or whether you're British Empire or what, mm-hmm. pick one, Chinese dynasties.
Yeah.
It goes through periods where things just don't go well at all, and we're going through one now. So the fact is that there are a whole host of issues right now where 60, 70, 80% of the people, American people, believe that this is what should happen. And the geniuses in Washington are going, oh, no. That's not what needs to happen. We know better. We're brilliant. We're geniuses. And so you've got this huge tension building up in America where the people say we want to do X and the government says, oh, no, we're going to do Y. And so it's not surprising that, you know, even though there's a huge awareness of this issue, the government still is holding fast. Mm. But this is like no other issue. I mean, this is the big one. This is the big enchilada. The decision to disclose is a huge one. It has enormous historical implications. So the government's not taking it lightly. But what will end the truth embargo will come from a number of different directions, and it's not about, you know, X number of people in the United States believing it's true or not true. One way will be the media. There's any number of entities within the media, mass media structure that could finally decide to move on this.
Yeah. Well, Larry King's been doing quite a bit of work on it, you know, for several years.
But he did a number of shows, but what I'm talking about would go well beyond that.
Okay.
What he did was helpful, but this is not what I'm talking about. A particular newspaper, a particular television news operation, basically saying enough is enough, and they go after all the players and start asking very tough questions. The truth embargo wouldn't last very long. Another nation could end the embargo at any time. There's a good 10 or 12 that could do this. There could be a powerful person come forward, a former Secretary of Defense, somebody really high up that just finally comes forward. That could start the avalanche. A couple of highly placed people or highly prominent celebrities, if they were to come forward and say, I've been dealing with extraterrestrials since I was 3 years old, that would do it. So there's just so many things that could trigger the disclosure from happening that it'll come from one of those directions. So our job, again, is not to – we're not building converts. This is not a religion. This is a political activist movement. We already know where we want to go. We already know what we have to accomplish. And we're not going to stop until we achieve that goal.
Now, is there any countries that you feel may be more closer to coming out with this information than maybe the U.S. or Canada?
Well, right now, I think it's still the case that the United States is the most likely country to go first. We were the designated disclosure country, I think, from the beginning. It was sort of understood. And so there's where you'd put your bets. But it's like a horse race where every year that goes by, the U.S. is less and less of a strong favorite.
Mm.
And the odds on it are dropping. So there are about 10 other countries. That the top five that I think, based upon what I'm seeing, that could make this move preemptively would be China, Russia, the United Kingdom, France, and Brazil.
Okay.
Any of those would do the trick, and one of the key things that I do as part of my advocacy is, you know, every way that I can, I get the message to the Obama administration, reminding them over and over and over again that they're running out of time, that if they don't get on the ball here, another nation is going to do this, and the consequences for the United States' world prestige and her historical legacy are going to be profound. Now, again, it's extremely difficult to talk common sense to government right now. I mean, it's almost impossible.
Right.
It's like spitting into the wind. It's like beating your head against a brick wall, which is one of the reasons why nothing works and why we're getting nowhere. But nevertheless, we keep doing it in hopes that they will get the message.
When you're talking to these individuals face-to-face, what is their reaction, or how do they respond to you?
Oh, you don't get to talk to them face-to-face.
Okay.
The way you communicate with the administration is through the media. You go on shows. You get put out press releases. You do open letters. And, of course, you have your websites. Or you put it out there. You talk to them that way. You don't go to the White House and talk to them.
So from a lobbyist point of view, you don't get your foot in the door in Washington and have meetings with politicians and say, hey, look, this is what we're trying to do, yada, yada, yada.
Look, back in the 90s, I had occasional meetings with members of Congress and so forth, but I quickly figured out that it was a waste of time, that the Congress was already congealing into a block of, cement.
Would they say anything to you off the record? Like, yeah, I know what you're doing, Stephen, and yeah. I agree with that, but...
They don't even go that far, but I will say this. I've never been thrown... I was never thrown out of an office, and nobody ever belittled me, but... Again, the truth embargo is particularly strong with them, and this was back in the 90s, and things were still very problematic. And so you get the sense that they sort of know that this is important, but they just simply can't act on it. And I finally realized talking to Congress is just a waste of time, and so I focused on the political media. The political media is probably more important than Congress. All of those shows and all of the papers that cover what's going on and write the articles, that's where things can get happening, right?
Okay.
The media has far more latitude about what it can say and do than the members of Congress, who are constrained 18 ways to Sunday. They've got to serve their constituents. They've got to serve the lobbyists. They've got to serve the PACs and everybody that's funded them. I mean, they're tied up. Mr. Smith goes to Washington is a myth. It's a fable. Right, okay. It ain't happening. It's not going to happen. Not in our lifetime. So,
great movie though.
Yeah, it was all right. the political media, on the other hand, I mean, they can raise holy hell anytime they want. Now they don't do what they should. They're still not doing their job, and they failed us on repeatedly. But nevertheless, they don't have the same restraints on them that members of Congress do. And you keep punching them up because here's another way to look at it. Getting to the truth of things, breaking big stories, winning Pulitzer Prizes, this is what they do, right? I mean, this is theoretically their raison d'etre. And so we're really encouraging them to do what they were born to do. Now, telling the truth, right, causing controversy, risking careers, This is not what the Congress is for. This is not their raison d'etre. So in the case of the Congress, you're really trying to press them to do what they're just not programmed to do. But with the media, you are. Now, the media was still boggled up by the truth embargo and contained by it for decades. Nevertheless, you're swimming with the tide. You swim with the current when you're dealing with the media ultimately, and I think that's where the breakthrough will come from. But when you're dealing with members of Congress and politicians, you are swimming against the current, and so I stopped all efforts to lobby there. Now, I'm still a lobbyist. I still have a political action committee, and I can jump back in any time, and I may do that. But it's the political media and the public awareness factors that I have been focusing on. But also, the reason I'm in L.A. right now and the reason I visited here a number of times is I'm making a lot of contacts in Los Angeles, and the Los Angeles entertainment industry is like a second capital of the United States. There's huge money and power here, and they're getting more political all the time. And so I think there's a much better chance of possibly connecting up with some serious power here that might decide to get in and really change the game than connecting up with Washington power.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of the people over there. I mean, Steven Spielberg is doing he's got a new TV series out now about aliens. He had one previous to that. There does seem to be a lot of alien interest.
Lot. It's everywhere. You can't fall down in this town without landing on either a development or an already signed off on
extraterrestrial-based script.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
The event, the visitors, it's the list goes on and on and on. Over
Cowboys
there.
And Aliens are up next. Get ready for that.
Yeah, Cowboys and Aliens. And then they just did Battle of L.A. A couple months ago. Expanded on that concept quite a bit.
Super 8, another Spielberg production.
Super 8. Yeah, it's pretty much been a nonstop flow of... And did you see anything behind that, or is it just them sort of calling out? Or are they just riding the popular wave, the way the... You know, after Interview with a Vampire, was everything was vampire this and vampire that.
Well, there were some vampire movies, but they can't touch the E.T. genre. Over 300 movies have been made about extraterrestrials since 1947. They have generated $35 billion in ticket sales, adjusted for inflation. When you throw in the TV shows, the revenue from that, plus product sales, the total amount of revenues generated in the entertainment industry on E.T. subject matters, somewhere between $50 and $75 billion.
Yeah.
So no lack
of interest there. No.
What now?
No lack of interest there.
Well, look, if I'm a producer or a director, but particularly a producer, and I'm aware that 85% of the American people believe the government's lying about E.T., 50% of the American people believe E.T.s are definitely here, 20% have had a major sighting, and between 5 and 7% have indicated in the polls that they've actually had contact with extraterrestrials, I'd be looking to do an E.T. movie every chance I could.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't hurt that it's also the most compelling subject matter in the world. And so these people are not stupid. They don't need the government to call them up and say, make an E.T. movie.
No.
Now, the government, I think, is capable of mucking around with Hollywood, and there's a researcher out there named Robbie Graham who... is extensively studying the complex relationship that may exist between the government and Hollywood over E.T. content. It's a difficult subject, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's been some of that. One of the most recent and most well-known stories is the Independence Day movie. They obviously, Independence Day beat the aliens, the president's flying a jet, you know, and all that stuff. So, yeah, they had good cooperation from the Pentagon. You know how that is. You need the odd plane. You need this. You need that. And there's a lot of ways that the Pentagon and the military can really help you in a film.
Well, the military has their own entertainment department.
Well, I mean, they have their own film and stuff, and they do that, of course,
because the planes and the helicopters,
Hollywood stuff. But what happened with Independence Day when the Pentagon discovered that they were going to be talking about Area 51? And they were going to be indicating that the Roswell craft was being researched there. They demanded it be pulled from the movie. And when it wasn't, they withdrew all their support. So this has happened a few times. But beyond that, who knows? We know that the government definitely met with the Hollywood moguls back during World War II to encourage them and make sure that they made some good propaganda war movies and all that.
Uh-huh.
Did they continue to do that after World War II in respect to the Soviet Union? I have a feeling they did. There were a lot of anti-communist movies that were made between 45 and 55. I think the government definitely was behind a lot of those and making sure they got done. I don't know if they helped fund it. Doesn't matter. But did they muck around with Hollywood on the E.T. issue? And my guess is probably not, because I think, or at least... not as much as we might think, because it would have been risky to, because anytime you go to somebody in Hollywood and say, you know, I need you to go this way on the UFO thing. Well, why? Why do you care? Well, you know, I mean, they're real. They're exposing the issue to people in Hollywood and that could easily go public. And so they've had to play their cards pretty close.
Mm.
But I'm sure they have on occasion, attempted to affect a particular movie because they thought it might put pressure on the embargo. Look, the government's attitude from 47, well, certainly from 53 to 1999, right, was if it helps the truth embargo, encourage it. If it hurts the truth embargo, discourage it. It's a simple policy.
Right.
And then the question is, how far do you go with respect to that? But that was it. And by and large, it worked quite well. I mean, the truth embargo was extremely successful. But they spent a ton of money on it. So I would hope it would be successful. But the game's over. I mean, the fact is that it ain't going to work much anymore. And there you have it.
Right. There was a rumor that there was some sort of an agreement between the ET presence and the government, the U.S. government, that it would be a date of disclosure. Mm. It was 20 years. It ended up being 2003 that date was supposed to occur. Have you heard that rumor?
Or I that's not a particularly significant rumor. There are other more important rumors, namely that
U.S. government meeting up with aliens.
There's rumors about a meeting with Eisenhower, and there's a meeting with Truman and so forth. There's a rumor about a treaty being signed. These are extremely significant exopolitical issues. There's enough smoke there that I encourage researchers to keep digging, and it wouldn't surprise me if some witnesses turn up on that, but these go back pretty far, and so not many people are still alive. But it would not surprise me if there were deals struck with ETs and meetings with the president, but I can't certainly state that as fact.
No, not at this point. That's one of the problems is stating something as an absolute fact. Mm-hmm. You can say, well, there's been millions of people that have claimed that they've been abducted, but does that prove abductions?
Yeah, it does. But it's not millions. There have been a couple of 100,000 accounts have been submitted. Okay. And it in a short amount of time, going back to the early 80s, Whitley Strieber plays a major part in that. His book Communion triggered an avalanche of accounts. Certainly Bud Hopkins' books triggered a lot of accounts. John Mack's book, more. So while a few thousand of these have been studied, maybe people have even been interviewed and worked with and what have you, the actual number of accounts is in the hundreds of thousands. We're talking
about
people that have written out pages of history about what's happened to them with no possibility of any financial gain, primarily anonymously, or at least, if they included their name, they highly doubted it was going to be in the New York Times. And these accounts create a fairly consistent body of evidence that likelihood is a couple hundred thousand people would report similar events from around the world, and having all that be a figment of their imagination is zero. And so I wasn't ready to say this until about 4 years ago, but that's about 4 or 5 years ago. I was publicly stating that there are three absolute facts that you can take to the bank here. I mean, 100%. There, after that, it all falls off a little bit, though some of them are in the 95 percentile. I mean, they're pretty likely. But the three facts are, is there an extraterrestrial presence? Absolutely. Does the government know about this and has chosen to withhold this information? Absolute fact. Is there contact going on between extraterrestrials? And what I mean by contact, I mean physical, in the same room contact. Absolute fact. Those are three absolute facts. Now, after that, I'm not aware of anything that's an absolute fact. But if you were to lay out on a chart 1,000 points of reference to this phenomenon, you could then organize that chart so each one of those points had a probability associated with it, and those probabilities would run from 1 or 2% right up to 99%. So obviously if you're a researcher, you want to focus on the stuff that's up in the 90s. You don't want to spend much time with the stuff that's down the 1, 2, 3, 5% range.
Yeah.
And then at the very end of that chart is the 100 percenters, the three pillars of this phenomena. Presence, the government awareness and truth embargo, and the contact going on. Those are the three stools on which the rest of all of this rests, and those are facts. And that's all you need to know. If those three facts alone justify a full-fledged global massive engagement of this issue by every school, college, university, governing body, every head of state in the world. And, of course, none of that is happening in the public domain and a limited amount in the private domain. So we have this massive gap between what should be happening and what is happening. And whenever you get a gap like that, bad things are going to happen every time.
Right.
Now, these individuals that have come out, you know, whether military or otherwise, and, you know, have said their experiences, mm-hmm. has that influenced any of the politicians or anybody that you deal with to make him, you know, say something?
Well, let me put it this way. Everything that happens that comes to the attention of politicians affects them. Perhaps it moves them a little closer to, in some cases, actually doing something. There have been a couple of politicians that have done something. Perhaps the best known is Stephen Schiff of New Mexico. But, you know how many members of Congress there have been, House and Senate, since 1947? Right? Hundreds of thousands. So, the fact is that, maybe that's a little high. It's probably somewhere between 75 and 100,000. Politicians have become so cowards. They've become so spineless,
okay.
with a few notable exceptions, that they're just not moved by anything. I mean, nothing really can move them. They are dysfunctional. They're like, you know, the person in a mental hospital ward cowering over in the corner in a fetal position, shaking like a leaf, wanting to be left alone. And so it almost doesn't matter what happens. Congress is essentially out of the game. However, the government's a big place, and there are people throughout government, and they're all affected one way or the other by this. But again, given where we are right now, we're more likely to see famous entertainment people.
Okay.
Famous sports stars, and maybe some retired politicians. They're out of the game, and they're never going back. Coming public and saying, look, I had a sighting, or more importantly, I'm a contactee. That is very possible, and I'm expecting that to start happening. I think it's the next major development, and it's more likely that the media is paying attention, and all of these things are affecting them. You have to understand, based on the number, just a simple analysis of the polling which has gone on, and there's been a lot of it in the last 15 years. We're talking Reuters, we're talking CNN, Time,
yeah.
We're talking Roper,
yep.
Ipsos. I mean, these are major polling operations. Based on the number, I can say with quite confidence that more than 50% of all the working journalists, editors, and publishers in the United States personally believe that ETs are here.
Right.
That 20% of them have had a sighting. And that there's a percent of those people that have actually contactees. Could be 2%.
Yeah.
Could be 5%. So just think about that. So you guys, well, half of them believe. So you're thinking, well, then why aren't half of them writing about it? Well, you know, it doesn't work that way. But clearly that's where they're at. And so, again, you see that underneath the facade, underneath and behind the truth embargo, you have this discrepancy. And at some point, it's going to break. And I believe it's most likely to break with the media. And when it does, it's over, right? You have, I'm sure, both seen many examples in your lifetime what happens when the media goes on a rampage.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing stops it. Nothing.
Right.
And the media frenzy that will come as this thing breaks will surpass anything you've seen to date. And I'm talking O.J. Simpson, Monica Lewinsky, Casey Anthony, name it.
The Royal Wedding.
Royal Wedding. It's going to be up there. Royal Wedding was pretty big. It'd be hard to top the Royal Wedding.
Yeah.
But that was less a media frenzy than a media focus. You know, they were kind of conducting this pretty well. I'm talking about when the media gets a hold of the super story, the incredible secret story, the story that's got, it's got lies and scandal and all of that. That's a different kind of frenzy. That's the frenzy I'm talking about. And we will have never seen anything like it. And the truth embargo will not stand a chance when that happens. And so one of my key jobs is to trigger that media firestorm.
Right. Okay, I'm going to get to how you're going to trigger that. But first I have a question. Mm-hmm. Why? Why has it been such a big secret? Let's break it down. Why is the government's or, and this would have to be a cooperative effort with governments all over the world, although some of them are coming out now, why in America for over 60 years has this been such a big secret? Let's break it down.
The proper answer to that is a 1,000-page book.
Right.
You understand that.
But there's bullet points.
I'll give you the short answer. The government knew about ETs almost certainly prior to 45. But when I say government, I mean a limited number of people, particularly the military. They may have even had a crash saucer back in the early 40s, but it was very contained, public not involved at all. This is before television news. This is before radio news of any size. This is before the internet, satellites, everything. It was totally under control. Okay. So, you know. I mean, obviously, a certain limited number of people realized, we're going to deal with this someday. Wasn't an issue. Then they dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They started up the bomb program. The Soviets started up their bomb program. We tested our first one in 45. The Soviets tested their first fission in 49. They tested their first nuclear in 53, and I think we tested our first nuclear in 51. And we were on our way to the next war, right, which everybody knew could happen and would be nuclear, and that would be the ballgame.
Right.
But in the middle of all that, right, which developed very fast after World War II, I mean, Churchill made a speech in 46 and said there was an Iron Curtain over Europe, and LeMay and Patton and a number of other generals wanted to go to war with the Soviets immediately. So, look, we were already headed for the next big one, and the next big one was going to be the last one in a way. So in the middle of all this, in early 47, E.T. start turning up everywhere. They're all over the place. They're being seen around the world. Sightings, we have no idea how many sightings there were. But right. If you go back and look at the news stories, they were everywhere. Well, that obviously alarmed the government. And then in 47, the big one. There's a crash disk at Roswell. The Army base people there are not cued in. They put out the press release stating they've got a disk. And then, of course, the government panics. They go, oh, my God. Truman orders Ramey to reverse the story about 12 hours later. They try to contain it. They manage to keep the press out of Roswell by and large. And it makes it a red balloon, and they dodge that bullet. But now they really have a problem. And so for the next 5 years, they're grappling with this issue and trying to keep it at bay. And then in 52, you have a mass sighting over Washington that leads to the Robertson panel toward the end of 52, CIA panel, and then in 53, they solidify the truth embargo. Why? Look what they were dealing with. They are facing a major world power that is committed to expansionism. They know they're going to, both of them are going to have nuclear and weapons. nuclear and then missiles, because both nations were working on ballistic missiles using the German Nazi scientists we both acquired as a parting gift after World War II.
Paperclip. Yeah.
And they're going, Christ Almighty, if we were to just dump this ET thing out in the middle of this, we've just put too much on the mule's back, and the mule's going to collapse. It could be destabilizing. It could lead to a mistake. It could trigger nuclear war. Plus, they needed to know more about the ETs. They needed to know more about the technology they had from the crash vehicles, and so they simply made a decision. And until we know more, until we have a sense of where this Cold War, this thing with the Soviets are going, we can't have this out in the public domain. Who's going to really argue against that? I mean, it's really hard to make a case that, oh, no, you should have spilled the beans, though it can be made. Still, it's not easy. So that's why they did it, national security. And I'm sure that, and of course, given the prestige and the power that the U.S. exerted in 1947 and 1950, its allies were not going to second guess us. We were the big dog on the porch. In fact, and we were the only thing preventing the Soviet Union from marching, its tanks right into Paris and London. And right. So if we told our allies, we want this contained and you're going to go along with it, all they did was said, thank you, anytime. Yes, sir. So that gets it going. Now, probably those inside the U.S. military intelligence community didn't know how long they might have to contain this. Maybe in 10 years, we work things out with the Soviets and things kind of get, copacetic. They had no way of knowing. But of course, we know what happened. The Cold War got worse and worse with each passing year. Berlin airlift crisis, the Cuban Missile Crisis of 62. Then we launched a proxy war in Southeast Asia. We're bombing, cities in North Vietnam under the Chinese border, right?
Right.
Then, and between that and World War II, we went to war with the Communist Chinese in Korea. Now, the Communist Chinese didn't have nuclear weapons then, but they eventually got them. Mm-hmm. And so now the Chinese have got nuclear weapons, the Soviet Union, France has got them, the United Kingdom has got them, we've got them, and they're mounting up in stockpiles by the thousands. And so now the situation was, say it's 1975, do we suddenly announce there's extraterrestrials engaging us in the middle of this with nuclear submarines off the coast that could launch on a minute's notice and you'd have about 23 seconds to live? No. So it's that simple. If there had not been, if the Soviet Union and the United States had ended up as friends after World War II, if the Soviet Union had not tried to dominate and take over Eastern Europe, if they had forgiven us for trying to keep the atom bomb secrets from them, and joined up with the United Nations and in general made peace, and everything was good, probably the truth embargo wouldn't have lasted more than 5-10 years tops. But that's not what happened, and so that is the answer.
Okay.
There was never going to be formal disclosure without ET intervention before the Cold War ended. Once the Cold War ended in 91, the door to disclosure was unlocked. It didn't get opened, but it was unlocked. And so the potential to go through that door was there starting from very late 1991 till now. And we're now in the 20th year. And then the question of, well, why didn't disclosure happen?
Yeah, why did it?
1998, that's I'm writing a book about that, and I'll get that out soon, but that's an even more complicated answer. But I think you're getting the picture.
Okay.
And it was never a secret. Remember, they have plenty of secrets. They have plenty of unacknowledged information. But the ET presence was never a secret.
No.
But how is it that they can get all the countries to work on the same sort of basis and keep this thing, on their lid?
Well, between 47 and 91, it was simple. We're spending trillions of dollars to keep the Soviet Union from kicking your butt, so shut your mouth. That was easy. After 91, it gets more complicated. And in fact, what happened is that we had a grace period of about 10 years, and by the end of 1999, a lot of these countries are going, all right, U.S., let's get on with this. Let's do it. And the U.S. wasn't doing it. We were dragging our feet. And that's when the French government made its move and demonstrated its displeasure and put pressure on the U.S. by allowing a non-governmental group called the Cometa Group to issue the Cometa Report late 1999. Yeah. And then later started releasing thousands of files, followed by the U.K., followed by Denmark, followed by Sweden, Canada, New Zealand, you name it.
Argentina.
Yeah, Argentina.
France, Ireland, Japan, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Russia, Spain, Sweden.
So what we know is that in spite of 10 years of that kind of pressure, the U.S. is still holding fast, but the embargo is crumbling, right? So we're running out of time. And as far as why, even under the current situation, that one of these nations has not preempted us on this, in other words, snatch that historical legacy out from under us, you know. It's like going on somebody's property and stealing their prize heifer.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, you know. I don't have an easy answer, but one possible explanation, and you know, I'm definitely out in speculative territory.
Okay.
Is that it's very likely that the country that knows the most about the ET technology, that's done the most reverse engineering, is the U.S. And the ET technology is the payoff. It's the Cracker Jack Box prize. It's the reason, one of the key reasons why we have to have disclosure. We've got to get that technology into play to start solving our problems before we all go over the cliff here. And if the U.S. is got the most information, a lot of the other nations may be thinking, you know, if we pull the plug on this, if we steal their prerogative, we may not see that technology working for us for a long time. Okay. So we're holding it over their heads in that way, but I don't know for sure.
But supposedly, though, I mean, apart from, you know, sightings and possible contacts, I'm assuming that, you know, these ET may have contacted, you know, numerous other political, you know, entities out there besides maybe U.S. and Russia. And you know, if they had gone to a smaller country, what prevented them from you know, not saying it?
Well, if the country is too small, if they tried to disclose, it could very well fall flat in its face. But, you know, let's be clear. There is a little, there is some evidence there that there might have been some direct contact way back in the beginning when all this got underway in the 40s, 50s.
Right.
There's damn little evidence that there's been any kind of that contact since. I mean, virtually nothing. So it could be, so we that is a big assumption. I have no idea whether that's going on.
Well, by damn little evidence, I mean, there's stuff, I'm sure you know about the stories of underground bases and, you know, but again, yeah. these are stories. Are we supposed to, you know, I guess they can pile up over time. But what's your outlook on that? I mean, is that just another dog in the race?
Well, it's another evidence strain, it's another thread, and it's one of those things you have to decide that probability number to. First of all, there's definitely underground bases, but they just could be human bases.
Exactly.
They don't have to be ET bases.
They don't have to be.
But if there are ET bases, this is a major fact. This would be a major issue, without question. Hugely exopolitical issue. It implies a whole bunch of things. But there could be underground bases that ETs control that we have no access to and can't do anything about. That's one scenario. Another scenario is that not only that we're cooperating, we're there. There's both humans and ETs actually working together in these bases. That's a huge deal. But again, you hear about these bases primarily in the U.S. You don't hear too much about them outside the U.S. That doesn't mean there aren't any.
I mean, right, right.
Stories about bases around the world, to be sure.
To be sure.
But there is another very significant fact here. And that is, I say fact, a data point. there's a very strong connection. I mean, if you even take a reasonable browse, of the evidence, it's obvious that there is a very powerful connection between the presence of extraterrestrials and the human nuclear weapons work.
Right.
They show up after Nagasaki, and we now have witnesses that have been coming forward for years now that are testifying to the fact that they've been toying with our nuclear missiles and shutting them down on a number of occasions. Obviously, the U.S. and Soviet Union, Russia, have the most development. We know there's been incidents over there. We don't have as much information, but that shouldn't surprise anybody, right? Clearly, we're going to know more about what happened in the United States between 1947 and 91 than we are in the Soviet Union between 47 and 91. But I would suspect there's quite a bit of activity there. We also have the Bentwaters case, which very well could have been a nuclear weapons tampering event. So there is a powerful connection to the nuclear weapons issue.
Right.
And so that would explain why we're seeing so much activity around our bases and what have you. But so that we know. That's well established. There's no doubts there. The underground bases and ETs is getting into some tough territory. You know, once you go down that road, I mean, you could get into all kinds of very powerful scenarios that you could chew on forever. But one thing's for sure, and this is another way to look at this.
Right.
If you view the disclosure event with a capital D as a decision to be made, then there are X number of data points sitting behind that decision that affect it. And we don't know all of them. We only know a few. We can guess at a few more, but the total number of data points we do not know.
Right.
And there's no question that some of these data points could be very, very problematic. There's no question. So I've always assumed that there are some of these, and that's why disclosure has been such a brutally difficult decision. But I can assure you that if there are ET bases operating with our permission on our territory, this is going to be a really tough press release that ultimately will have to come out post-disclosure. If there's an ET basis on our territory against our will that they simply can do, that's also still a tough one.
Right.
If there are bases in which we are cooperating directly with ETs, that is going to be a tough press release. If ETs have a treaty with the United States in which they barter technology for the right to abduct, that is going to be a hugely difficult press release. If ETs are, in fact, abusing people, even killing people, to get resources, that is going to be an incredibly difficult press release.
Yeah, that'll be
on and on.
Yeah, okay? it gets no comment, no comment. Okay.
Here is their problem. There are countries out there that probably don't have ET bases on them that could disclose tomorrow. In other words, there's countries out there that don't really care about our problems, and they don't care about our data points or our problematic press releases, and any one of them could end this truth embargo tomorrow. And so while there was a time in this world when if the United States told any country other than the communist bloc to jump, the answer was how high? Well, that ship has sailed. We do not have that kind of influence anymore. Our prestige around the world is at historic lows. We have blown numerous relationships through decades of bad policy. And so the idea that the United States is controlling 20, 30, 40 of the top industrial nations and can completely determine what they do regarding this issue is fantasy. And so I don't care what the public relations problems of the United States is. It only has two choices. Either it discloses and deals with its public relations problem, or another nation is going to disclose and they'll still have to deal with their public relations problem.
Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's Lepingo, lapingoproducts.com.
Hello, this is Scott Jordan, and I would personally like to thank all of our listeners for their emails of encouragement. It means a great deal to us. All of Spectrum shows are available in two formats, an MP3 stream you can listen to on our site, as well as a YouTube version. All of Spectrum shows are full-length and free to listen to, and if I have my way, always will be. Tom and myself do all this work out of pocket, and freely give our time and effort to giving you, the listener, the best, most informative experience possible. I would also like to thank our listeners who have donated in the past to help with our expenses. Every donation goes directly to keeping the project alive. Thank you, enjoy, and keep listening.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. We can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
Okay.
Now, do you think that if a country that may not have, let's say, any kind of contact with the ETs, but they do have whatever files and information, just like, you know, they have done over the past few years now by disclosing that type of information, is that considered disclosure? Is that giving enough ammunition to you and us?
Here's the way I look at it. For a nation to be the disclosure nation, they need two things. They need to be sufficiently substantive on the world stage, and they need to be able to produce some pretty good evidence from their deep dark files to back up their claim. Now, the second is not too difficult, because all of the first world nations and a significant number of the second world nations have been chasing UFOs with their air forces for decades. Mm. They, you know, may not always do it, but they send up chase planes when their airspace is violated.
Yeah, we have the Mexican footage with the planes going up and chasing the UFOs.
Well, the famous one, of course, was not a chase plane. It was a drug surveillance plane that happened to pick up infrared imagery. But what I'm saying is that, let me put it this way. You fly an unauthorized plane into any one of the 50 top industrial countries, and you're going to have a jet on your ass pretty quickly. This is no mystery here. And it shouldn't shock anybody to know that, very few exceptions, all of these defense chase planes are equipped with cameras. Gun cameras, they're often called. You don't go up and intercept a violator of your airspace without a camera. Because if you end up shooting the damn thing down and another nation decides to declare war, you need to show what happened. You need to show proof of what went on. You need to be able to confirm what happened.
Right.
So you film it. So all over the world, in the archives of these nations, are gun camera footage from chase events where defense planes have been, running after UFO. Guess what? None of that has ever been released. You could file FOIAs for gun camera footage until you were blue in the face. You will never get 2 inches of cellular. It ain't going to happen. Because obviously, if that were released, that's the ball game. It's all over. And so the thing is that plenty of nations have this gun camera footage, and that would be probably the very first thing that they would haul out. So then it really comes down to the nation And it, you know, it's somewhat subjective, but I think if Belize were to troll that press conference, it's going nowhere. Paraguay, probably nowhere. Bangladesh, not likely. Okay. Thailand, don't think so. But I think you can sort of figure out which nations would do the trick. Clearly, they are the United States, Russia, China, Britain, Australia, Canada, Germany, probably Spain, probably Italy, maybe not Greece now, because poor Greece is just going into the crapper. It's kind of sad. Turkey, all right. Probably not Iran. Definitely not Iraq. Maybe the Ukraine. Maybe Poland. As you can see, we're already starting to run out. Mexico, definitely a possibility there. And then Brazil, definitely. Argentina, possibly. Chile, probably not. Bolivia, no. Venezuela, no. But I've just listed a whole bunch of countries. Any one of those countries holds that press release, shows that gun camera footage, and the head of state confirms that extraterrestrials are here, what will happen is that a couple of other of the second-tier countries will follow suit, because they're all going to want to be on, you know, center stage. And then so you got U.S. and Russia and China facing about three or four that have just announced this. Meanwhile, the press is going completely crazy in the U.S. and the U.K. and Australia and Canada. And so they're now under deluges of questions. It's a ball game over. So, you know, pick your country. But there's more than enough above the threshold to launch this that we are officially, as far as I'm concerned, in a disclosure race right now. Which nation gets there first?
Yeah.
But if you get, let's say, a second-tier country to come out with something, mm-hmm. do you think that the major medias of countries like U.S. and Canada and England and, you know, would they even care that much?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, thanks. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, not if the assistant, you know, minister of the interior. I'm talking about if the head of state of Brazil holds a press conference in Brasilia with his head of his air force and his army on either side, announces to the Brazilian people that extraterrestrials have been engaging us for decades, and then plays 20 minutes of gun camera footage of their jets, you know, chasing these discs all over Brazil. Trust me, game over.
Okay.
Now, what is, let's say, your expectation if let's say, in the States right now, if somebody were to come out and say something major, how would you think they would do it, or how do you expect it to be done?
Or how does it have to happen?
Well, you know, the best answer I give you is the one I give all the time. I mean, I'm asked this question all the time. How should it happen? And the way it should happen let me put it this way. The way it should happen is that the United Nations makes the announcement with full cooperation of the entire Security Council and blah, blah, blah. But that's not going to happen because the United States has been trashed by its member nations, which, you know, because nationalism is still pretty much the only game in town. And so they've kind of ruined that. So that's the way it should happen. So barring that, it might be a consortium of nations, but that's not going to happen because you couldn't put a consortium together without the whole thing leaking out and blowing up in your face. And so it'll be a single nation. Let's assume it's the United States. It'll happen this way. First of all, the press conference will take place on a Friday evening, probably around 6:30, maybe 7. The president's people will approach the networks and request a little bit of time for the president to make a brief announcement on Friday afternoon, maybe around 5, 4:30, 4 rush hour, or maybe after rush hour, 6 o'clock. As you know, our networks are not required to give the president anything, but a couple of minutes, no big deal. Sure, no problem. So they slot, and this will include the cable networks as well, they'll slot the time for the president to go on for a few minutes on a Friday evening, say 6:30. About 10 to 15 minutes before he actually goes on, members of the president's executive team will approach all of these networks and say, actually, we're also going to be needing 2 hours directly following the press conference or his remarks, and this is not a request. You will do it, all right, period. And they will explain that as soon as the conference is over, they're going to immediately direct their feeds to the press conference to follow. At this point, the media is starting getting, hello, what's going on? But they got 10 minutes to think about that, at which point the president will appear in the Oval Office. Now, if I'm the president, I don't make that announcement. What I do, and this is to depoliticize it, right, and to put it in a proper context, because this is, while it may be a United States disclosure event, this is all about the planet. And guess what? The planet is actually more than the American dream. So President Obama, if he's smart, will say something like this very quickly. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, my fellow Americans. Tonight, you are going to learn some extraordinary information. You need to know two things. One, I, as your president, have fully authorized the release of this information. And two, I am assured by my top advisors that there is no reason for you to be unduly alarmed. Thank you. At which point, the feed immediately shifts to an already set up press conference ready to go at some appropriate location. When the cameras, when the screen comes up, you will see a podium. You will see an individual standing at that podium. And behind him or her, or to the side, you will see a long set of tables with about 12 to 15 people. Those people will mostly be recognizable. They will be prominent individuals involved in key aspects of human society. Head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, head of the intelligence, CIA, two or three major religious figures, all right? A couple of profound academics, a couple of leading scientists, and so forth. These individuals will have been contacted maybe 3 hours before the event, maybe four or five. They will be picked up and flown to Washington for this, and on the way they will be briefed and basically told they need to have 5 minutes ready to say and be prepared to take in limited form some questions from the press. And they will be sequestered from that moment right up until they turn up at that press conference. Then, right at the beginning, this individual at the podium, who has been selected for being nonpartisan, well-liked, very smart, probably science-based, will come to the podium, and that person will be the one that will announce to the world that there is an extraterrestrial presence engaging us, that the governments, many of the governments of the world have known about this for six decades or more, and the decision was made to withhold this information for national security reasons, but tonight we can now convey this to you. I'm asked who the ideal person would be, and there are a number that come to mind, but the one that I think probably best fits the requirements would be Michio Kaku. So once Michio Kaku has announced the extraterrestrial presence, at that point he will turn to the panel, and each of these members, this cross-section panel, will each give 3 to 5 minute comment about what this means or about what the government, something Kate Cochin, from their perspective about the issue. They'll run down that, and that'll take about, I don't know, 40 minutes. And then they will open it up to the press for a limited number of questions to the panel and to the moderator. All hell will, of course, broken loose. It'll get pretty intense. Most of the questions will be not answerable at that time, and they'll get a lot of, we can't go into that now, but later. And then it'll be over. It'll be about 8:30, 9 o'clock, after the news cycle, going into a weekend, so that the people have 2 days to digest all this. The financial community has 2 days to digest all this. And then the government will make the decision whether they want to open the banks and the stock market on Monday or keep them closed. But they'll have a couple of days to figure it out. That, to me, is how it should happen, and most likely will happen.
And that's now, when the questions happen.
But is it possible that they would do it in a slower way and put out some information just to kind of like wean us into the
prepare us? Yeah,
they've already done the slow way. They're in their 64th year.
But I'm saying
that
like a little.
Is gone.
No, but I mean maybe a little bit more, like a little bit more juice, you know.
But look, I mean, I'm sure there have been many plans out there to ramp this up. I think one plan was to announce microbial life on Mars and then maybe announce small life on Mars and water and then ultimately an artifact on Mars from a civilization long gone and blah, blah, blah. I think there have been a number of sort of possible approaches, but overall they were abandoned. The public is just too far ahead of the government on this. They'd see right through it. But let me be clear. I'm sure even right up until the day of disclosure, there are a number of high-level, highly well-placed, well-placed people inside government whose view would be, no, we need 10 more years, we need 20 more years, we need 5, whatever. And they would want to string it out, do it slow. But it's over. They don't have that option anymore. It's gone.
Right.
Yeah, but
there is something that it is you can talk about, and that is this, that you see, disclosure is just the acknowledgement of the ET presence. That's all it is, nothing more.
Okay.
How much we learn after that, that's the post-disclosure world. And that is going to be really, really interesting. Because the government is going to want to say as little as possible for as long as possible, and the media will be completely on the public side at that point, are going to want as much as possible as soon as possible. And so you will now have a monumental tug of war that will begin on Monday morning. And it's going to be pretty remarkable to watch it play out. I think the government has probably substantially underestimated how long they can hold on to much of this information. I think once it starts coming, it's going to be like a dam breaking. That's the ball game. It's over. It's a flood. I also believe that there will be some things that will be withheld. At some point, the government will dig in and say, that's it. We can't go there. There are some things that still must be maintained for national security reasons. But if the people have already learned a great deal about the ET presence and a whole bunch of stuff, they're going to be much more inclined or willing to perhaps give them that, right? To allow them to maintain certain totally classified realms on this. Right now, there's not much sympathy at all for them keeping any secrets. But who knows? Again, all I can tell you guys is that, you know, when you go to bed tonight, say a little prayer of thank you. Because assuming you don't get run over by a bus on the way home tonight, you are going to be able to watch in high-definition televisions on the Internet the most extraordinary event in human history and the most profound era of human history unfold in real time right before your eyes. And if you are of a mind, you can actually get involved with the post-disclosure reality. And if you live 100 or 1,000 lifetimes, you're never going to see anything like it again. This is the big show. And I can only begin to describe what it'll be like, but I assure you it will be well beyond your wildest dreams. It's going to be absolutely amazing.
Not that we know how long our lifetimes are going to be, but you've been in the game for quite a while, banging away at this issue. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened to that degree yet. Right. And you still feel strongly that it will.
Oh, yeah, it's spring-loaded right now. The only thing that could prevent it now would be some profoundly disruptive act. And there are a lot of things going on in the world today that mirroring the truth embargo and the ET presence that the government's just not telling you about. So we're in the dark, I mean, on so many things, right. Which is extremely not good. But last night, the History Inter... Was it last night? Might have been... It was Tuesday night. The History International Channel brought out a documentary that was shown a few times in 2009 on History Channel. This came out on History International. It's an extremely significant documentary called The Day After Disaster. Okay. And it was done with full cooperation of Homeland Security, and it's about a nuclear event going off in Washington, D.C. I encourage everybody to get this documentary. You can buy it online, The Day After Disaster, and watch it very, very carefully. This is a limited hangout. It's a way of at least putting a little bit in play without, quote, scaring the poor children that you know, they serve, you know, us, meaning us, the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But the number one concern of the military intelligence community and the insiders in Washington, D.C., going all the way back to the 90s, well before 9/11, is a nuclear explosion in Washington, D.C., which many of them consider virtually inevitable. And the problem there, if such an event took place, yes, the disclosure process, the disclosure movement would be derailed. And I would have no idea at that point when disclosure might take place unless another country acted. But all hell will be breaking loose, and we will be heading down another nightmare into another nightmare under the old paradigm protocols.
Right.
And so one of the reasons why we're so desperate to get some major funding for this, even though disclosure is inevitable, it'll happen eventually. So people say, well, what's the big deal? Relax. Take a cruise. It's all going to happen.
Okay.
Is that if we don't get this done soon, something like a nuclear explosion in Washington is going to take place, and we're in deep trouble. Why? What is the difference? And this is the intellectual concept that very few people, frankly, get. Certainly not those that could fund this advocacy work. And this concept, which I talk about more and more, is that there is a huge difference between the post-disclosure and the pre-disclosure world. They are two different, radically different realities. And that the worldview of hundreds of millions, if not billions of people, is going to be substantially changed post-disclosure. In other words, new world. Okay. Now, what does that mean? It means that if the same event happens in the pre-disclosure world, the outcome could be quite different than if it were to happen in the post-disclosure world.
Okay.
And to drive this point home, I'll actually use an analogy that was in the Day After Disaster movie, which, again, I encourage everybody listening to go get and watch, either on Netflix or rent it or whatever. I think it's even free on YouTube, like everything else.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Back in 19, I think it was 14, give me a year or two, a couple of Croats, it might have been Czechs, I need to get that down. I want to look like I know what I'm talking about. We were pissed off about something. Stood on the street, waited for a chance to kill the Archduke Ferdinand and his wife, and they pulled it off. Now, regardless of what one thinks or feels about the Archduke Ferdinand and his wife, I think it's fair to say that the world would have been able to struggle on without them, right? They'd have gotten another duke and his wife, and that person would have taken over and whatever, and the world would have gone on. And things could, you know, opportunities for reform and change would have been there. But of course, that's not what happened. The reaction to that, under the old worldviews, that have been reigning supreme for thousands of years, within a very short amount of time, I think it was 30 days, launched Europe into World War I, a catastrophe, killing millions and millions of people and setting the stage for World War II, which killed tens upon tens of millions of people. And so it wasn't the actual assassination that destroyed Europe in 1914. It was the response to it. And it's always been that way. It wasn't the Reichstag fire that destroyed Germany. It was the response to the Reichstag fire. And on and on and on. Okay. Not too long ago, somebody, triggered an event, conducted an event in New York and Washington, D.C. that killed about 3,000 people, destroyed two buildings that were already past their probably shelf life, and one building they were able to repair in approximately a year. It's a terrible tragedy for the 3,000 people that died and their families. It did cost us some money, right? But a drop in the bucket compared to the trillions we've just squandered. The response to that event resulted in two wars, now four. It's killed several million people, created blood feuds and bad blood that will go on for decades, if not centuries, nearly bankrupted the United States. All right? I think you get my point.
Right.
If that was what happened when we lost 3,000 people in the Trade Center, what do you think the response would be in the pre-disclosure world to a nuclear blast destroying the heart of Washington, killing the entire United States Congress, and sending 200,000 or 300,000 people to slow radiation deaths and forcing the evacuation and migration of millions of other people? What do you think the response to that would be? On the other hand, if such an event were to occur in the post-disclosure world, when all of the nations of the world and all of the people of the world, with a few minor exceptions, knew that, you know, we got our problems and we got our issues and bad things happen, but there is a galaxy of civilizations out there. We're already being engaged. New technology is coming to help us, right? Stuff we've already got. We may have contact with these beings in the near future. They may have cures for our diseases. There is all kinds of possibilities in this new world. And so somebody nukes Washington, D.C., and now you decide, what is the reaction going to be? I contend that the reaction could be completely different and that the ultimate outcome would be profoundly less destructive. This is the core of the advocacy. This is why we have to find that funding as soon as possible and get this done. Because I'm telling you right now, somebody is going to do it. It's guaranteed. If it's not Washington, it's Memphis. If it's not Memphis, it's Atlanta. If it's not Atlanta, it's Tel Aviv. If it's not Tel Aviv, it's Medina. If it's not Medina, it's going to be Moscow. And so if we don't get into the new world pretty soon, you will see the old world paradigms at play again. And when they have worked their way out, you will be living in a place that frankly you'd rather not be. A place where the living envy the dead and the first world pleasures and the American dream are gone and will probably not be seen again in 10 lifetimes. That's what's at stake here. That is what we've been trying to get across. And people say it's paranoia and fear-mongering, but let me tell you, the History Channel International did a full two-hour documentary, very subdued, very sober, filled with members of the national security teams and Homeland Security, laying out that exact scenario. And one of the key things they said in that documentary, it was very brief, they glossed over it very quickly, but they intimated that the response to that event could be rather quite draconian.
Right.
So there you have it, folks. Sit back, do nothing, wait for it to happen, see how it plays out, or get on board and get this disclosure event done before bad things happen. Now, it may be And this is the other side of the coin. Which, I mean, this is an endpoint, which is actually a pretty important point, too.
Wow.
If we have disclosure and we see this dramatic change in worldview and we see this shift away from this old thinking, disclosure may actually prevent it from happening. It may prevent another war. It may prevent a lot of things. It has the power to change things in ways that humans might otherwise take many decades to affect. So it could actually prevent these things. And so, yeah, let's not even have a nuclear event and blow up a city, right? Because, you know, when that ideologue fanatic, that sociopath, narcissistic head case, goes to some money guy in some place and says, you get me a bomb, I'm going to blow up a city because it's absolutely imperative that we do this because you see the world must happen and blah, blah, blah. And the guy is going to say, you know, I got a pretty good life. You know, I've got a lot of money. You know, there's extraterrestrials out there. Yeah, 10 years, I might be going to the stars. There's all kinds of economic possibilities. Cures for cancer that might be coming along. The world may be a pretty nice place. So if you don't mind, I'm not going to get you a bomb so you can blow up Tel Aviv, okay? So why don't you take your scruffy beard and your megalomania and your insanity and go somewhere else? We're all sold out here. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
I hope so, because that's the fundamental message. I'll keep telling it.
That's your message. That's what you've been pounding out, you know, for as long as you've been working at this.
And I hope it becomes the disclosure movement's message. I hope that we start to line up behind these fundamental concepts. They're not that complicated.
No, right? They're not.
But we need a coherent. We need to be able to provide to the people a coherent, rational explanation why they should care, why they should act, and why they should act now. Until they get that, they're not likely to do anything profound. I believe they are starting to hear this message. But, you know, it comes down to this. You know, hearing it is one thing. Feeling good about it is one thing. But doing something about it is another thing.
Right, and that's why you've got events like the World Disclosure Day.
Sure.
You've got that coming up, and I want you to talk a little bit about that. Tom, I mean, have you got any other questions before we get into this? Because
No, it's okay.
I want to get into the World Disclosure Day, and you can tell me what that's all about.
Sure. 6 days ago, I made the decision to move on this. I thought about it before. It was tossed out into play briefly back August by an activist blogger named Steve Becco. And I think Jeffrey West was also an activist who had batted the idea around. But it didn't go anywhere. They weren't in a position to drive it. So it just was tossed out and the ripples faded. But it was in my mind, again, after thinking about it over the years. But, you know, I'm wrapped up in a lot of things. And I got plenty of trouble, plenty of problems. You know, not having any money, believe me, it's just one problem after another. But 6 days ago, I got a call from the reporter for the Financial Times of London who wanted to talk to me about World UFO Day, which is July the 2nd. It's been, quote, a designated day for about 10 years, going back to, I think, 2001.
Okay.
Got a nice little website, quality site, looks good. It's had a little bit of impact, drawn a little bit of attention, but not anything profound, which is not a criticism. But halfway through this conversation, it hit home. You know how sometimes it just takes the right circumstance for something to just lock into place in your brain?
Yeah.
It occurred to me, of course, I'd been thinking along these lines before, but this is an instance where the issue, the action, and the concept came together at once. Why am I talking to this guy about World UFO Day? UFO thing is ancient history. UFO era was over 20 years ago. There needs to be a World Disclosure Day. And I told him that. I said, you know, what we really need is a World Disclosure Day. Don't be surprised if it doesn't turn up. Okay, fine. He hangs up. And this is where the role of the lone advocate, the lone gunman type guy, the one that's operating independently, though fully networked, with no board of directors and no committees, no wife even or whatever to tell you what to do and when to do it. This is when that becomes a very powerful strength.
Okay.
I hung up the phone and said, I'm going to launch World Disclosure Day for real. I'm going to make it the next Earth Day, and we're going to start now. Within 1 hour, I had the Facebook page up for World Disclosure Day and had already advertised it to several hundred groups in Facebook and also sent out a Twitter. Within 3 hours, I had the website up, including the registration page. All right? Within 24 hours, I'd sent out an international press release to 3,000 media outlets. Right? And within 72 hours, we already had 1,000 endorsements for World Disclosure Day. We're now up to 2,000 endorsements. That's how fast you can work. The point is, this World Disclosure Day is the New Earth Day. It is designed to focus attention on the issue, not only the people, but also the media's attention. It's to give people a point of reference for events. In other words, they got a whole year to cook up some nice events for July the 8th, all right, for 2012. It gives them the reason to do interviews and do media and everything else. And so it's a perfectly appropriate advocacy tool. Now, the July 8th was chosen. Obviously, I put it on a pretty short fuse. I mean, not enough time to get any events going. So, but why did I pick that day? I picked July 8th for a number of reasons. One, on July the 8th, 1947, is the day that General Roger Ramey, the head of 8th Army Air Force Headquarters in Fort Worth, held the event where he held up the tinfoil that he'd gotten from some fish wrapped up in his freezer, and said, no, they didn't capture a disc. It wasn't a disc they found. It was a raw wind weather balloon. And thus was the informal beginning of the truth embargo. And so we set World Disclosure Day on the 8th to remind ourselves that that's when it began, and now we're going to bring it to a close. All right? Point one. Point two, it's near the Roswell event. You know, the Roswell event is the best-known event in all of this phenomena in the world. And every time around this time of year, the media focuses on it. So we put Disclosure Day near the Roswell event. Secondly, Disclosure, the UFO Day, is still around, and it's July the 2nd. Now, the reason they chose July the 2nd was straightforward enough. It was one of the dates that some researchers felt was the day of the Roswell crash. Now, the fact is, we don't know the exact day of the Roswell crash.
No.
It's been anywhere between June the 25th or 6th to July the 2nd. But July the 2nd is a good enough date as any, and so they picked July the 2nd. So essentially what we have now is we have the UFO Day and Disclosure Day bracketing the annual Roswell Festival. So it made total sense. This is the day, July the 8th. However, as I put up on the website, a very significant note there that I want people to grok. I want them to get it and see how critical it is. World Disclosure Day, which has been trademarked by PRG, right, in order to protect it from being used for frivolous nonsense. I'm sure you understand why we do that. World Disclosure Day, the day that a world government, one of those governments that I talked about, ends the truth embargo by going in front of their people and acknowledging the extraterrestrial presence, whatever date that is, August 20, November 6, January 2, instantly, World Disclosure Day will be changed to that date. And from that day forward, that will be World Disclosure Day. We won't miss a beat. And I can assure you the value of World Disclosure Day in the post-disclosure world will be 1,000 times greater. And so essentially, I'm trying to establish already the historical basis for a focus point. And so from that point forward, just like with Earth Day, that day of the year, whatever day it turns out to be, will be the day that we re-examine, refocus, and come together to say, is the post-disclosure world going the way we want it? Are the corporate elite and the government and the jackasses that have given us, you know, the 20th century, Are they trying to reconfigure it the way they want to? Is it the new boss same as the old boss? Are we getting screwed again, or are we involved in this process? Are we making a difference? Are we shaping the post-disclosure world? That will be the purpose of the World Disclosure Day. And so all of that happened within 7 days. Now, tomorrow, I will send out another international press release to draw attention to it, though it'll be different from the first one. And I'm already getting media attention, and I expect to get quite a bit of media between now and the end of July. At the rate that the endorsements are coming in, we are on the edges of going viral. We've already gone viral in China. The Chinese endorsements are pouring in at 5 times the rate of U.S. endorsements. It's almost too much to handle. And so last time I checked, there was 1.3 billion people in China. So God knows where this
is. Well, that's going to happen. Just so everybody knows, this is a pre-record show.
Yes.
And it is July 8th. So isn't that interesting?
Okay. Well, good. So this is going to air tomorrow on July 8th. Okay. So let me just tell your people. Okay, this is World
Disclosure. It's going to be on Tuesday, which is July the 12th.
But
Canada, right now in Eastern, where we are, it is now July 8th.
So let me just mention that your show mm-hmm. is the first show that I have talked about this.
On the record, folks.
Right?
Yeah.
And congratulations for that little piece of history. All right? And I welcome all of your listeners to this day in history. We'll see how far it goes. It's only as powerful as the number of people that endorse it, but I have a hunch that by the end of the year I will have over 1 million endorsements of World Disclosure Day, and that's probably enough to guarantee that it's set forever, indefinitely. But we'll see. I mean, but you know, just from the early response, and by the way, I'm getting comments from hundreds and hundreds of these are coming in with comments, which I'll be posting pretty soon as well.
Oh, good.
And the comments are very strong. So the early take on this is that this is going to go viral. Now, because of Facebook. I mean, I've got 6 groups on Facebook, and I belong to 20 others related to this subject matter.
Right.
So we have the ability to constantly seed this out into Facebook, which, in case you didn't know, is up to 600 million people.
Right.
So I see no reason why this won't go viral. And so consequently, we're going to have 1 million people, I think, at some point this year that have endorsed. Now, we fully expect some notable personal and organizational endorsements to come in. And while I don't want to diminish the value of every endorsement, we know how life is, reality is, those notable endorsements will go up in a special section on the front registration page so people can kind of see the mainstream people that are coming on. And that will be fun. Right?
Yeah.
We're giving all of the notable politicians and movie stars and sports stars out there that know damn well this is true, who feel they're ready to put their name behind their beliefs, this is an excellent way for them to do it. Endorse this day, this designated day, this truth day,
right?
And let us put your name up there. And from there, we'll see where it goes. But, you know, it's a lot more comfortable when your name is on a list of 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 notables than it is when it's parked all by itself.
Right.
So very quickly, those that do come forward are not going to be alone. They're going to be part of a growing cadre of individuals that believe the way the disclosure movement activists believe and the way the people that have been pursuing this issue believe since the late 40s and early 50s. We have a right to know. We can handle the truth. We are not children. And we want the government back in the truth business. We've had enough of lies, propaganda, disinformation. Get back in the truth business, and a lot of things will start going well very soon.
Do you or will you have a special section honoring the people that have come out in the disclosure movement, who have been notable people, who have been in the military, who have come up and came out in the public and given their stories out for the record.
Well, look, you know, there's other ways that I acknowledge those people,
okay.
And there will be more along those lines. I mean, there's several other projects in the works, but no one goes up on the disclosure endorsement page unless they endorse it. In other words, I'm not making any assumptions here. I know a lot of people that I'm sure that'll endorse it, but I'm not putting their name up until I get an email from them.
Right.
That's proper procedure.
Uh-huh.
But you're right. I've got some things in the works that will go a long ways to highlighting the witnesses and the courage that they have exercised here and their contributions. Not that I haven't done that already. I mean,
Of course you have.
Yeah, but no, there's much more to be done there. And but you know, if in fact a lot of the witnesses do endorse, I may create a special section for them. I mean, they may not be notable,
mm-hmm.
like say a famous movie star,
right.
a former member of Congress, but they are special, and so they would have their own section. We call them witnesses,
right?
Truth tellers. You know, but I can't get carried away. I'm going to have, you know, sections for everybody. But the witnesses are special. I mean, a perfect example would be Bob Salas. I mean, Bob Salas is the quintessential example of a government witness.
Right.
People like that, I probably have a special section when they step forward to endorse in order to highlight them. And then I can link to their websites and things like that. Now, there's a lot of possibilities here.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with it.
I can do with it. Well, you know, look, everybody knows Earth Day was a huge success. Everybody knows that it has generated 1,000 stories, many projects, whatever, and it has had an impact on the environmental movement, all right? My dream is that World Disclosure Day will have the same kind of impact on the truth movement. And then we'll have Earth Day and World Disclosure Day, and they perfectly complement each other, in my view.
Mm-hmm.
So all that would be cool, too.
Is there a section, I know this is all a new project for you, is there a section that has the little d disclosures, like events leading up to sort of thing?
Yeah.
And I'll use this as an example. And Tom actually told me about this. Released on the NSA website in April 21 of this year, 2011, they released this information, several pages of messages received from an extraterrestrial source that had been decoded, key to extraterrestrial messages and unclassified, yada, yada, yada.
I can tell you about that. That was a release of a report that was given. It was notable because, again, we have so many people involved in this issue now that anything comes out, they're on it within hours. Fact is, what that was is that somebody did a study on how they might deal with extraterrestrials in terms of communication. And it was a hypothetical, and that was the report. Some people thought it was the real thing. It wasn't.
Okay. It wasn't the NSA coming out and saying, we've got contact, just so you know.
But before that, the CIA did something interesting. They created a new website, a new section called The Vault, which I'm sure John Greenwald Jr. noted with interest, because, of course, he created the Black Vault 20 years ago, for putting up, how would you say, documents that are a little bit more exotic than others. And they put up a document referring to a memo that referred to crashed events back in 47. The value of that memo is not clear, and the memo was known, but it had never been released by the CIA. It was only available through FOIA. And so this was an interesting little thing they did there, and that was noted, and that took off. But to answer your question, look, if you go to the ParadigmResearchGroup.org website, and you scroll, and you go to the main page, which is the PRG page, because that's a portal to like 7 or 8 sites, but you go to the PRG page,
right?
You scroll down the center section, you will find an incomplete compilation of events that I consider disclosure markers.
Right.
But more importantly, if you go to the Paradigm Clock section, find the Paradigm Clock section, go in there, and work your way through till you get to the Paradigm Clock Chronicle, you will see a list of events impacting the disclosure process, hundreds and hundreds of them going all the way back to 1947. That was one of my first major projects. Hundreds of hours went into that. I don't talk about it much now. I can revitalize it any time. But in the Paradigm Clock section of the Paradigm Research Group website, you will find hundreds and hundreds of items that you can look through chronologically starting from 47 going forward. However, a lot has happened in the last couple of years, and I am about to put together a compilation of what I would call disclosure markers. They're probably about 50, and I'll be getting that out pretty soon. It'll also be part of my presentation at Leeds. I'm going to be at the Leeds Conference in United Kingdom, August 5 through 7. Leeds Exopolitics Conference, I encourage everybody to check that out if they are going to be in the UK. I will then be speaking in Louisville, Kentucky, third week of December in Louisville, Kentucky. Go to my website. You can get the link to that. And
we'll have links to everything. We'll have links to your site. We'll have links to – you said that that one site was a link to seven other sites. So yeah, I'll probably put that link up for sure.
ParadigmResearchGroup.org is the main portal.
Okay.
Then once you get into that, you will see a bunch of sites listed, one of which is the PRG site. That's where you go to check out what I told you. That some of these markers, that's in the center section, and then there, and in there you'll find a Paradigm Clock section.
Right.
And that's a very interesting little section. Dig down into that, and eventually you'll get to the Paradigm Clock Time Chronicle, and there you will find a treasure trove of historical events, which in my view, affected the disclosure process, which was not formalized in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, but right. Started coming forward, formalized in 1992. Huge amount of material there. I mean, I haven't written any books, but I've written the equivalent of five or six books on those websites.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier you are writing a book.
Yeah.
Are you willing to talk about it, or is it you're keeping it under wraps for now?
No, I'm not keeping it under wraps. It's called The Day After Disclosure.
Okay.
I'd like to get it done by the end of the year. It will be self-published. I may put it up on Amazon soon for pre-sale. But, yeah, that is the book I'm writing. And it will have some similarities to Bryce Sable and Richard Dolan's book, A Day After Disclosure. But it will be different in a lot of ways. It is called Day After Disclosure. Reflections on the Most Profound Event in Human History by an Exopolitical Activist. So it's going to be a little bit more personal.
Okay.
And a little bit more inside outside. But it was going to be my, you know, first book, finally write that book. And wish me luck because, you know, my attention span is not getting any longer.
Oh, okay. So you're just in the stages of writing it now, or you're finished and just doing editing?
Oh, no. I'm in the very early stages of writing it. What I have done is created a very nice cover.
Okay.
So, yeah, I've got a great cover. So
cover's going to be awesome.
Awesome cover. I'll be putting that out pretty soon. Maybe up on, you know, I'll put it up for pre-sale on Amazon soon. And, whatever happens, I had a cover.
Yeah.
I don't have the kind of discipline that Richard Dolan has, but I'm hoping to find it somehow. So.
Speaking of Richard Dolan, mm-hmm. Just off the top of my head here, you made me think of something. Richard talks about breakaway civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Because this technology has been, back engineered apparently, they would have these sorts of technologies. He talks about a breakaway civilization. How would that affect disclosure? I mean, the big disclosure would lead to the major questions of, well, because they're just saying that we're aware of the presence of extraterrestrials and their interaction with Earth. They're not necessarily coming out and saying, yes, we've got captured craft, we've been doing back engineering, we've got new technology, because that would open up a whole kettle of worms that would be like, you know, well, if you have all this back engineered technology, why didn't you give it to us 30 years ago?
But be assured, they are going to have to tell us that. I mean, that stuff there, that won't last long. They'll have to come out with that pretty quickly. That's good news, actually. I mean, that's in their favor. They got much bigger problems than that. But, you know, whatever they think they're going to be able to hold back, it's going to be not what they think.
Okay.
As far as Richard, it's an interesting concept. He's a smart guy, and And he's trying to, the point he's trying to make with breakaway civilization is that when you have enough secrecy, when you have enough secret operations, covert projects, underground labs, underground facilities, I mean, at some point, you are literally creating a kind of second civilization. Some people say it's, you know, the government within government.
Uh-huh.
I don't think so. But you certainly are creating a world within a world. And, you know, over time.
Well, it certainly does lend itself to a certain degree of power.
Well, I mean, you know, power is, it depends on how you describe power. I mean, it cuts both ways.
Influence?
The more it's removed from the mainstream world that we know, to some degree it loses a lot of its influence, right? But
okay.
The more it's removed, the more it becomes a world in and of itself. It develops its own rules, its own protocols, its own regulations. And so it's kind of sailing off in another direction. And eventually, right, if it isn't, if this situation isn't rectified, you could have a real problem on your hands, all right? And this kind of idea actually has been done in science fiction before. I mean, it's not new.
It's true.
Are we that far down the road? Do we have a true breakaway civilization? I'd have to read his latest stuff. My guess is that Richard is certainly trying to put out that concept, right? He wants people to understand it. Exactly how far he thinks we've gone down the road of a breakaway, I don't know. I'd have to check up on that. But the concept is worthwhile getting out there. One of the reasons we have got to reform the secret empire, see, that's what I call it. I call it a secret empire, which kind of implies a breakaway civilization, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they're going to make war on Iraq or that they're going to tell, you know, Congress how to vote.
No.
But it means that they got their own empire and they're doing their thing and we're not telling them what to do. And so it's inevitable that at some point these two worlds are going to come in conflict. And that's just going to create more havoc and craziness. So we have to reform the secret empire. One of the key things that has to happen after disclosure is we need a major age of reform. And reforming the secret empire is going to be near the top of the list.
Right.
We're not talking about dragging guys out in the street and putting them in, you know, chains. We're not talking about, you know, mass trial or anything else. We're talking about reforming the military intelligence complex, restructuring the entire secret world so that it is small as possible, it is minimally secretive, in other words, no more secretive than necessary, and that it has got full oversight by elected officials, regardless of what they think of them. And I must admit, they don't think much of them right now, and I don't blame them.
No.
But, you know, we can elect great politicians next year if we want to. I mean, you know, we don't have a perfect country, but, you know, until they, you know, declare martial law, we can throw the entire Congress out in its butt,
right,
if we wanted to. So, you know, things are bad now. They can get better any time. So, you know, again, this is a great idea that Richard is developing. I applaud him, of course. I'm developing some ideas. There's really a lot going on, a lot of great stuff. So overall, let me tell you, if I had a decent backer and a few hundred grand in the bank right now, I tell you, I'd be the happiest dude on the planet. Because I could do everything I need to do. I could do all the activism I need to do. I could develop new projects, even get more funding. But that's been my biggest issue. I've never been able to find a major backer. I've never been able to break through the ridicule wall.
Nice.
And convince somebody out there that it's safe now for them to change history, for them to step forward and impact history. You're not going to get, you know, their house is not going to be broken into. The men in black are not going to show up. They're not going to lose their jobs. Well, lose their companies or whatever the hell. They're just going to be heroes. But it's still not quite there yet. But I tell you, all other things considered, though, man, there is a lot happening, and I'm still quite confident that disclosure is very soon. And then disclosure, as I've often said, floats all boats.
Okay, yep. I wanna point people again to the World Disclosure Day. I assume the website is worlddisclosureday.com.
Org,
of course, mm-hmm. Yes, organization. And that's up now. I've looked at the page. It's a great page. People can go there. And what would you want them to do? Do they just sign up? Or
Yeah, if they're a person, they hit the personal disclosure email form or the personal endorsement email form. If they're they want a registered organization, then they go to the organizational email form.
Okay.
And it automatically gets sent in about 24 hours. I'll load it up and it'll be up on the site.
Good stuff. And the talks that you're going to be giving in the next little while, if you'll just rename those. And where you're going
to
be?
Go to my site and click on the link to the Leeds Exopolitics Conference. Really strong lineup. August 5 through 7 in Leeds, England. I'll be there, and then I'm going to be around for a couple of months afterwards, and I will be putting out some notices shortly that I am available for informal speaking venues. So if anybody wants to host me on either side of the channel, I'll probably be able to do it. So I expect to do some speaking stops throughout the rest of August and into September in Europe. I've already done two tours over there. This will be the third. And again, the reason I'm doing that is because, I think I can really stir up Europe on this. I can really get Europe, piped in. Right now, China is the lead nation. They're going crazy in China.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried because, if this thing goes mega viral in China, I can end up with 50 million endorsements. I'm trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to handle that under the software I've got.
Right.
But if you can come in one way
if
or another.
If you could go over there and give some talks, that might be good as well.
Sure. Yeah. Hey, I'm not turning out any invites from China. It would be a hell of a thing, but you know how that goes. When China's ready to invite me, they'll invite me. Until then, I'll do my thing.
Hey, maybe the call just went out. Maybe you'll get a call on Wednesday morning.
this is a very significant thing. Remember, this is a communist-controlled, ideological-controlled state.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that UFOs is not a problem in China. It's not a contentious issue. It is if you start to beat on the government and say, why don't you tell us the truth? But if you're interested in UFOs and stuff, no problem. And so, obviously, people in China, all over the country, they're coming in from cities all over China, are able to send an email and endorse this. They don't have any concerns about it, and I don't expect there's going to be a problem. So, it's notable. Look, let's say 3 weeks from now, I've got 15,000 endorsements. 6,000 are from the U.S. and Europe, and 9,000 are from China. The implications? You see what's going on here? At some point, you've got to say, hey, wait a minute. What's going on here? Because as I've said many times, the number one country that I think could very well make the decision that it will be the disclosure nation is the People's Republic of China.
Wow, that would be huge.
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. Okay, we're at the limit of our time. I want to thank you for coming on the show, the first show for July 8th, the disclosure, World Disclosure Day. Everybody, I want you to go check out that site and sign up if you're an organization, if you're a group, if you're a person, and get that information out there. And spread it viral. Put it on Facebook, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And let's get the information out there.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. It was a really great show. Thank you. We covered a tremendous amount of territory. I got into some stuff in depth that I don't often do. Appreciate that opportunity. So look forward to, I know your show will be archived, and I'm sure it'll help draw some excellent attention to the issue.
Yep, the show will be archived on our site, www.spectrumradionetwork.com, and it's on the archives page, full length and free to listen to. And there'll also be a YouTube version within about a month. I'm going to say a month, hopefully, but it'll probably be more like 6 weeks because I'm behind a little bit, as my listeners know. thanks for coming down, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Adios.
Adios.